This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Great to have you with us. I'm Helen Farmer, and this is the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast, your chance to connect with guests, hear real life stories and be inspired. We were joined by superstar couple Regan Hillier and Juanpa. He is there talking quantum flow, and she is the number one manifestation teacher in the world. She's been called the millionaire maker. So what do they say about creating abundance in your life, unlocking your potential and welcoming money into your account? We'll be finding out more. Plus, Ludmilla Maliba was on hand discussing issues from giving birth out of wedlock to exactly what you need to know about employing a nanny and the gratuity at the end of her service.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We're very lucky to have stolen away our next guests from some very busy clients, because joining us now is Regan Hillier. She grew up in Auckland, New Zealand, and was studying to be an architect until one day she realised that she wasn't living her purpose and instead wanted to create a life like so many of us do that she loves. And today she helps other people doing that. She's a serial entrepreneur, a mindset coach, and travels the world as a motivational speaker, teaching people how to live what she calls an abundant life. We're going to find out exactly what that means. She's also Mind Valley's manifestation author and has a huge following on social media. Regan joining us alongside Juan Pablo Barahona, who is the founder of the Quantum Flow Method. They're both in the studio and ready to take your questions on what money means to you, how to welcome it into your life, perhaps really trying to find your purpose. And Regan, I'd love to start with you, if you don't mind, and start at the beginning, because that architecture route, why did you find yourself going down that? And why did you realise that it was perhaps wrong for you?
Yes, absolutely. So I started out on that path really because I was on a quest to please my father.
Oh, you know, my dad, familiar tale.
Yes, my dad said to me so many times growing up, you know, Regan, if I had your opportunities, I would have been an architect. And so very unconsciously, I started going down that path. I really didn't know what I wanted to do, like I think many teenagers, you know. Mm. And so enrolled myself in university to be an architect. And I had a moment a couple of years into architecture school where a new lecturer walked into the studio and said something along the lines of, you know, welcome future architects, I want to lead you through a visualization process. 20 years out from now, you're going to see the architect that you're born to be. And everyone got really excited. And I thought, okay. And I closed my eyes and I started visualizing and seeing this life that was in front of me. And honestly, I felt sick to my stomach.
So I wanted to bolt. Get
yeah,
out of that
I
room.
Did bolt. Mm-hmm. Yes, I ran out.
It takes an awful lot of self-awareness to realize that in the moment, but then also to start making steps and making choices to realize what you do want, and then to actually do it. And you've been called, you know, the millionaire maker. You've obviously transformed your own life, but have made it something of your own life work to help other people recognize their purpose and create what we said, you know, is an abundant life. What does that mean, abundant to you?
To me, living your most abundant life is really living your life fully on your terms in whatever way that looks like for you. And that looks very different to everybody. But I really believe that everyone can have it all and they don't have to be sacrificing one thing for the other. You know, even Oprah says you can have it all, but not all at once. And I disagree. I think you can have it all at once if you choose that.
Oh, this is something I think so many working parents, myself included, really struggle with. And there's a big guilt part that I'm sure we're going to be getting messages about. But I think for so many people, it's about recognizing what you want. That's the beginning piece, because you, as I said, had the awareness in that lecture room to go, this isn't what I want, and to take the step. But how often do people actually zoom out of their life and think, actually, things are ticking along great, but am I happy? Am I living aligned to my values? Is this what everything I could have dreamt of and more? So we're going to be unpacking a little bit as well. And, you know, in the sessions you've spoken in the past, Regan, about how 80% of financial success is, you know, psychology and 20% is strategy. Can you tell us, you know, where you kind of find this ratio useful as a tool?
Yeah, it's useful basically everywhere because so many people are grasping outside of themselves. And that was me for a long time. You know, when I figured out, okay, I don't want to be an architect, but I have no idea what I want to do with my life. Mm-hmm. I went on this quest of figuring out, well, how do I create a life that I love? And I started learning all these different strategies from how to trade Forex and how to sell dot-com businesses and like all these things outside of me, right? And nothing was working. You know, I got into a place where I was over six figures in personal debt and credit card loans up to my ears. And I said to one of my mentors, hours. You know, maybe I'm not cut out for this dream life that I'm envisioning. Maybe I should just get a job and be an architect, you know? And he said to me, he said, Regan, it's 80% an inner game, 80% mindset and energetics and psychology and all of this, and then 20% what you do on the outside. And he said, what are you doing about this 80% daily? How are you conditioning yourself from the inside out to succeed? And that's a lot of our work together, is helping people with their mindset, their energy, their frequency, how are they in their bodies? All of it counts. And then the 20% becomes very easy. It becomes very obvious then what action you take in your life.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
She's been called the world's number one manifestation teacher. Regan Hillier's with us today. Her energetic architecture method has been described as a millionaire maker because many of her clients have become millionaires as a result of her coaching. We're also joined today by the founder of something that I'm desperate to find out a little bit more about, the Quantum Flow Method. Juanpa is with us this afternoon. I'm so intrigued by this, sir. What exactly is a Quantum Flow Method? And please explain it in terms that I can understand.
Thank you. Yes.
Welcome.
Yes, grateful to be here. So this is a method that I've been working on for the last 25 years. And
I don't mean to interrupt, but you look about 35, so this is very confusing to me.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So 25 years in the making.
Yes, well, I started my spiritual journey very, very young. At 9 years old, I was seeing how we would help my brother that diagnosed him with epilepsy, like very, very like dramatic.
Seizures
on his nervous system, was suffering a lot. So he was almost dying in 2 years. That's what the doctor said. So we said, no, this is a limiting belief and we're going to find out how to do it. And we saw all the healers and shamans and everything we could to save him. And that's what got me in the path. Like, he was my everything. He was my best friend. So I'm like, I'm with you. I'm supporting you. Like, I'll do whatever you're doing. And I got into everything, yoga and Qigong and energy and kinesiology, Chinese medicine, all types of shamanism, philosophy, mindset, hypnosis, NLP, like anything that would help him, I was in. And then I was just kind of like fascinated by it. And then I decided to go deeper. So I studied professionally and got so much results in myself, helped him so much. He's now like 40 years after, he's the happiest person in the planet. Half of his body is almost dead, but his brain works perfectly and he's really happy. Like, he walks 15 kilometers a day, so to say. Like, it's incredible. Like, he's a miracle. The doctors don't understand, but it is possible. And that's part of what we do with Quantum Flow, is like, how can we wake up our full potential? How can we let go of all those limitations that are holding us back in health, in abundance, right? Prosperity, in relationships, really, like living in love, like being loved and living with the partner of your dreams, for example, right? We see it like a fairy tale or something, but it is real. It is possible. Like, we live this fairy tale every day. It is possible to manifest this, right? In every area of life.
Juanpa, you mentioned before the beliefs that were put in place with your brother, and I presume a lot of them were from doctors and, you know, medical professionals. But when it's not a diagnosis as such, when it's something like, I'm never going to be rich, or I'm never going to meet my dream partner, that's something that happens to other people, where do you think those beliefs come from?
They are the unconscious mind. And this is what we do with Quantum Flow and also energetic architecture. That's why the mix of these two methods is so powerful, because we go right into the unconscious mind and we rewire the unconscious mind. It's like, okay, that was a belief system set there. Who knows when you're in your mother's womb or when you were 3 years old, we don't know, but we kind of close the doors to that because it's too heavy to be carrying that with us. So you kind of put it under the pillow, but it's always there. So when people were commenting that, oh, I don't know what happens, like, I'm not closing those deals right at the end, like, it's almost 70% of them that go away, it's because there's still a belief that I'm not good enough. I can't manifest that. It's too much money. Will I hold it? Like, who knows where that comes from? It doesn't matter. What matters is to let go of those beliefs from the core, which for us, when you really study the science of the unconscious mind, like, it's right in your nervous system. So we shift in the nervous system. We release all these like crystals that are in the nervous system that are creating blockages for the electricity, putting it in a very simple way because it's very complicated neuroscience when you study the body. But putting it very simply, you're releasing these blockages, then more electricity, more energy is going to go into your brain from the lowest centers of energy, which are all related to nervous plexus, right, that we all have in our body. And this energy is released. And all of a sudden, you are full of creativity, of inspiration, of energy.
Things start happening. We've got lots of messages to get through. I hope you don't mind if we go to the text line. Hannah, I think, is probably speaking the words that many people will recognize, which is, I'm financially fine. Of course, would like more, wouldn't we all? And have a happy family life. Work is going well, but I'm not someone who has, quote, big goals. How can I identify my goals and unlock that potential? Regan, what do you tend to recommend if someone like Hannah, and I'm sure lots of people listening today, goes, do you know what? Life's fine. You know, I could be happier. Yes, I could be richer, of course. But there's a niggle. There's this thought of, what could be? How do you help people start to pin that down?
Yeah, this question is very familiar to me because I remember even at a young age, a lot of people would ask me, you know, what's your dream? What's your vision? And I felt kind of similar. I was like, you know, my life's fine. Who am I to ask for more? And I think for many of us, we're conditioned from a really young age to stop dreaming. And we're told at school, I was definitely told, stop daydreaming, come back to now, you know? And even if you have a dream as a child, often you're told, like, who are you to think that? Or no one in our family's done that. Or, you know, that's crazy, right? So we have a lot of this conditioning. And I think it's kind of like going to the gym and working out a new muscle, you know? It might take some time to tap into this, but the most important thing is to start tapping into it, right? And so sit there even 10 minutes a day and ask yourself, if I was to be totally unapologetic about my dream, about my vision, what would I ask for in my life? And just allow it to come.
Even.
It is scary, I know.
Yeah. Because what you're often doing in that case is identifying decisions you've made or choices you've made and having to undo them and perhaps undo huge parts of your life, which might be mean a partner or a job or a country even. And that's a really intimidating thing. But I guess, you know, it's talking about what's on the other side of that fear.
Yes, it's what's on the other side of it. And what happens in our life is that we hit these unconscious upper limits, mm-hmm. right? And if we can't show our system what's on the other side of that dream, that vision, that goal, it literally marks it as a big black hole, right? It's like, okay, I don't know what's on the end of that goal. So but you might die, basically. And our system's wired to keep us safe and alive and breathing. So not only do you want to be asking, okay, what's my dream? What's my bigger vision? What's my goal? You also want to be asking, what's beyond that? Mm-hmm. If that was already in my life, what would I then ask for? What would I expand into? If I'd already made that large amount of money, then what would the next larger amount of money be? And this is very common to hit this place where your whole system goes, I don't even know. And you want to hit that point. You want to lean into it before you are unconsciously create leaning into it in your life, and your default unconscious system goes, nope, I'm going to keep you back in your comfort zone, mm-hmm. back where is known and familiar, back in your current reality. So you want to be constantly expanding these limits, and it takes practice, and it takes some deep breaths, and it takes some courage and some conviction.
As I asked a Wampa before about those kind of limiting beliefs and where they come from, when it comes to money in particular, Regan, and you work with a lot of people, a lot of small businesses who want to, of course, expand their business and welcome more money into their lives. What are some of the common attitudes or obstacles that you hear and that you are helping clients with that perhaps people listening today could be identifying with and overcoming as well?
Yeah, I think one of them is we often run a program that we don't believe we're deserving and worthy of that amount of money. You know, we receive the amount of money each day, each month, each year that we unconsciously believe we're deserving and worthy of. So it's really good to start looking at that and start going, okay, well, if I was to believe that I was worthy of this, what would be different within me? Mm-hmm. Another big piece that I see is that people get stuck in scarcity. They get stuck in not enoughness and contraction. And the thing is, if you want to be in abundance, your system can be in in scarcity or it can be in abundance, but it can't be in both at the same time. So if we don't make a conscious choice to be in abundance, we default back into our patterns of scarcity and worrying that there's not enough. You know, I remember a moment when I was at university and I hardly had any money to my name, and I was in the supermarket and I was, you know, adding up the shopping cart as we go, right? And I got to the blueberries, and I love blueberries, and I went to pick them up, and then I saw the price and it was like $8.70 or something. And I was like, I can't get the blueberries. They're $8.70. And automatically I reached for the strawberries because they were like $4 or something, right? I put them in my shopping cart and I kept walking and I was like, what am I doing? I don't even like strawberries.
What a waste of $4.
What a waste of $4. And I realized at this moment, like, wow, if I really made that choice from contraction, from I'm not enough to have the blueberries right now, is that $4 or so, $4.70 that I'm going to save, is that really going to make a big difference in my life? And I went back and I put the strawberries back and I chose the blueberries, and I made a choice in my life at that moment. Okay, I'm going to choose the blueberries. Wherever possible from now, I'm going to choose abundance.
That's the name of your next book, Regan.
choose the blueberries.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking about life balance today, and joining us live in the studio is Regan Hillier. We also got Juan Pablo Barjona, he is joining us. They live in Costa Rica, but hopefully going to be spending a bit more time in the UAE moving forward. We're finding out about that. They're also both authors on Mind Valley, that education platform that has transformed the lives of so many people. Regan started out studying to be an architect, but realised early on that was not the way she wanted to build her life, and has now been named as the Millionaire Maker. She coaches people all over the world on unlocking their potential, changing their limiting beliefs around money, but mostly about living what she calls an abundant life. And Juanpa is here joining us. He is the founder of the Quantum Flow Method, and some really interesting messages coming in, guys, especially around money. So this is from Tom. Regan, maybe you can speak to this. Tom says, growing up, I was always hearing money doesn't grow on trees. And I think that's made me feel like I always need to hustle and struggle to make ends meet. How can I change my attitude so money feels more playful than hard work?
Yes, I love this. And I was also told this on repeat as a child
we
as well.
I think I say it to my own children.
Right? So firstly, Tom, I just love that you're actually aware of this, because most people run these unconscious stories around money, but they're not even aware that they're pumping in their unconscious. So the cool thing is that money is one of the greatest mirrors and the greatest reflectors that we have access to. And so if we want to change our experience of money, that starts from within us, right? And so one of the concepts I love to play with is this idea that you're in an intimate relationship with money. Most people don't realize that unless you're living in a cave and you just don't interact with money and people donate you food, then you are in relationship with money. And if you're in an intimate relationship with money, if that money was a human, how would that relationship be right now? How would that marriage be? How are you showing up for money? Are you ignoring money? Are you denying money? Are you putting all these different constraints and commands and demands on money? Are you ignoring money completely and just maybe checking in every 2 months? I mean, if that was a human, how would they feel right now? And so once you see that, you get to consciously design your intimate relationship with money. And you can literally go on dates with money, right? Once a day, 5-10 minutes, you can sit down and consciously date money and connect with the energy of money. Close your eyes, put your hand on your heart and be like, hey, money, what's up? How are you? I'm here. This is my dream. Do you want to support me in this? What could I do to show up better? Money, how do we make this a more playful experience? What would I be like if I was to play with money more and actually drop out these old constructs and this hustle energy, right? And you actually get to define it and create it from the inside out and make it fun, make it an exploration.
I think it's fear that, as I said, is holding a lot of people back, especially in Dubai, where, you know, whether we're talking about cost of living or you need a visa, you need to be working in order to live here. So the thought of making these big decisions can feel quite overwhelming. So I wanted to come to a message here that perhaps is calling for a bit of a big decision. Juanpa, I'm hoping you can help here. Anonymous message, and it's absolutely fine to be anonymous, saying, I'm after some inspiration and or a kick up the bum. Saying, I'm early 40s, need to change. I've been feeling unhappy and unfulfilled for quite some time, but I'm done making excuses. I've always been dogged by low self-esteem and lack of confidence, even though I can come across as confident and bubbly on the outside. Inside, I'm definitely not. What have some of your learnings through your various practices and indeed, you know, working together with Regan kind of taught you about making some of these changes, especially when speaking to not believing that you can?
Of course, no. I think we all deal with that. The thing is, many of us just mask it and kind of go along with it. But
thank you for saying
we
that.
We all have, right? So, and I accept that it's something I've gone through. Regan goes through all the time. We support each other on that. But that's the work. That's the human experience. That's why we're here. So let's get raw and real. This is part of being human. And you can build it, and not from a mask, not trying to, you know, fake it till you make it. I don't believe in that. It's like starting first loving yourself. Like, what parts do you love about yourself? Are you able to write a list of 10 things you love about yourself? Start seeing yourself, like, be happy with who you are right now, where you are right now, not the moment you have money, not the moment you achieve your goal. Right now, can you love yourself? Can you be your best cheerleader, your best parent, the parent we didn't have, right? Because for me, for example, I had parents that were like, there's always more, you can do more, like, look, like, you can be better, you're so good. Like, it was never enough. And I grew with that, and that gave me lack of confidence. So start being that parent that, hey, great, you did that, that's amazing, even if it's a little thing. Start cheering yourself up and building what we call in Quantum Flow the core. Really go into your core and start, like, what's your passion? What do you love? Do you love writing? Do you love singing? Do you love dancing? Do you love going for a walk? Do you love whatever you love? Like, start doing more of that. Wake up that inner child, just because you love, not because you want to make money, not because you, just because you love. It's like nurturing yourself, and from there, I promise you, you're gonna start feeling inspiration. You're gonna wake up with you're just happy with life. Like, life loves you, and you love life. It's indescribable.
For so many people, it's that shying away from those questions, because, you know, it's a big deal, and we're very quick to distract ourselves now. You know, we're very quick to buy something, eat something, pick up our phone, and perhaps not be okay with not being okay.
Yeah.
And so for anyone who's listening goes, yeah, I'd love to do that, but how do I find the time in my day? How do I prioritize that? What do you say to anyone who is really just trying to get through the day, trying to earn enough money to feed their family and, you know, just, I don't want to say survive, but they're not thriving.
Yeah, no, but they are in survival mode. And this is when we go into, like, what we teach about the nervous system and really reset your nervous system from survival to thriving. Because once you are in stress mode, then everything is going to be surviving. Like, it's like, I'll barely make it. And you're never happy because you're always trying to just keep up with it. But in order to reset it, it has to come from the inside out. As Regan was saying, 80% is the inner game. 20% is what you do outside. So if this person can learn to breathe, just to breathe properly, do practices like, well, Quantum Flow or yoga or Qigong, whatever works, like going to the gym, anything that helps them physically release the stress and rewire their nervous system, I promise you, even if they're just barely making it, they can get to that happiness. And the more happy they are, then the easier it's going to start opening up to new ideas, new businesses, new beginnings. But if they're still in survival mode, that's going to keep them always in the same box.
Regan, what are some things that you do on a daily basis that perhaps you didn't do in your previous life that you feel kind of add to your life, your mindset, working on that 80% of psychology?
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's so many different tools, and I just really encourage people to go with what feels like it works for you, because some people are like, you know, you have to journal, or you have to meditate, or this or that.
Like, but I can't do affirmations. It makes me cringe.
Yeah.
And find, it feels like a chore.
Right. Find what's fun and find what's exciting and find what works until it doesn't work, and then find something else, you know? So I think what's important more so than the tool is creating the intentional space and remembering as well that, you know, if we want to change our future, our current reality has nothing to do with where we're actually heading. You know, so many people look at their current reality now and they basically look at their past as well, and then they copy paste that past into their future because they think, oh, this is my life. And your example of, oh, you know, I'm just struggling, I'm just getting by, well, that's just how it is. And they copy paste more of that into their reality. It's so important to just take a step back every day, once a day, even just 5-10 minutes, and just stand outside of yourself and realize, like, wow, every second is a new opportunity to completely change my life from the inside out. Yeah.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Helen with you through until 5 o'clock. Joining us in the studio, we've got Wampa and we've got Regan as well, as we're talking about creating abundance in your life. And a question that's come in, which I think is a really interesting one, Regan, is talking about, you know, having an abundant life and fulfilling your potential. And the question is about the relationship with the planet as well, which I know is something you're really passionate about, saying, is it possible to have an abundant life yet still respect the environment and the planet? What would you say to that?
I would say living a true abundant life life is also respecting the planet. I don't think it's an either or conversation. It gets to be all of it. And it's really, really possible. You know, this is really a core heartbeat of also what we're creating with one of our projects in Costa Rica. It's called The Nest. And it's really a high level luxury eco-sustainable community. And, you know, when we set off on this mission, we looked for other models of sustainable luxury. And they're few and far between. You know, there's things that are luxurious, but they're not so great for the planet. And there's things that are very eco, but they're not so luxurious, you know? Mm. And so that was one of our big missions, you know, fusing that together.
Totally. We love that fusion. And it is possible when you study certain materials, we study a lifestyle. It's actually a lifestyle because abundance is a lifestyle. People relate it just with money, but you can have all the money in the world. We work with billionaires that are super unhappy, super unhealthy, disconnected. It's like, okay, helping them back to the real abundance, which is living in love with life, in their relationships, with their health, feeling amazing when they wake up, sleeping amazing. That's real abundance, right? Money is just part of it.
Can I ask then, if anyone wants to get in touch with you both, I know you've written book together, you've got coaches that you work with together. Regan, if anyone wants to find out more about tapping into that potential, having that abundant life, and of course Quantum Flow, we're talking about confidence and all aspects really of spirituality and energy there, what's the best way of reaching you?
Yeah, for me, everything's under my name, Regan Hillier, on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and send me a DM. I do reply to my DMs and look at them, and reganhillier.com. and then for you, Wampa?
Also, Juan Pablo Barahona. It's a little different
spell. Best accent.
Right? But Juanpa Global also. I don't know if you can write it down somewhere.
If you want those details, I'd be happy to send them. Just send us a message on 4001. Wishing you a wonderful last few days in Dubai. Looking forward to welcoming you back again. Love to have in the studio and might have some news to announce there, hopefully. But wonderful to hear what it's all about and where it's all come from, and hopefully helping anyone that's been listening today. Thank you both. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Helen.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Ludmilla Maliver joining us live from the USA, here to answer your questions and mine, looking behind the headlines. But most importantly, this is your chance to get the answers that you need on any aspect of living here in the UAE when it comes to anything legal. So we have had questions about giving birth out of wedlock. We've had questions about tenancy agreements, about nannies working at the weekend. Really, if it's on your mind or you need some clarity, please reach out. Ludmilla Maliver, thank you so much for being with us. How are you?
I'm great. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
I'm away.
It was lovely. It was really lovely. Portugal for a family holiday. Highly recommended. Absolutely great mix of city and food and eating in Lisbon. Then we went up to Nazaré, which is where the 100-foot waves are, where they have the surf competitions, and had a bit of a seaside break. Then we went into the middle and did medieval cities and more food, and then down to the south coast. So absolutely loved it. When I've unpacked and done the laundry, I'll try to pull together some thoughts on Instagram for anyone that thinks they might be going. When are you back on our sandy shores?
I will be back next week.
I hope the dust storm has abated by then, plus the temperature dropped by about 10 degrees. That was fun landing. I was like, oh, I won't be putting my laundry outside because it's going to get a little bit sandy. Now, no rest for the wicked, my dear. We've got lots of messages to get through. But before we go to the text line, I wanted to ask you a little bit about this new real estate rule regarding payments. Can you break it down for us and what it actually means for UAE citizens, Ludmilla? What do we need to know?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it applies to real estate brokers, law firms, and other types of agents. So real estate brokers, law firms, and brokers, I guess it could be financial brokers. So these are the categories of professionals, if you will, who are affected by this new regulation. And ultimately, what it comes down to is that anything to do with real estate purchases, sales and purchases, to be exact, has to be, and if it's in paid in one of the three methods, then those kinds of transactions must be reported. I mean, that's a sort of synopsis of it. Now, what that means is that in the context, again, of real estate, anyone who wants to purchase or sell with either using cash, that is sort of a single payment cash that's more than 55,000 dirhams, or payments with virtual assets, or payments where the funds used in the transaction have been derived from virtual assets. So these are the payments that must be reported, or the transactions that are done with these types of payments must be reported to the authorities. Now, what that means in practical terms is that, let's say, if you're a real estate broker or a law firm, as is the case with us, and a client comes and wants to buy a property using virtual assets, or more likely, that's been more common, proceeds or payments that they have already materialized by selling their virtual assets, those transactions must be reported to the authorities. What that means is, as a law firm or as a broker, you must require your client to obtain all sorts of information, I guess, more about the identity of the client, what kind of platforms they use to sell their virtual assets, a sort of fairly sort of detailed line of questioning. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this applies not just to individuals, but also corporations or corporate entities. So ultimately, it's much heightened reporting requirements for those professionals that deal with sales and purchases of real estate in the UAE.
So more now, paperwork, but more transparency, presumably.
Yes. So, and why that came when it did, it perhaps because there has obviously been an increase in real estate transactions in the UAE, which has been a great development for the country. But at the same time, there have been a few developers, for example, that have discussed and or introduced virtual payments as a method of buying and selling properties. So obviously that whole industry is developing and evolving very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And while the UAE has a number of virtual asset laws and authorities, the laws, the foundation of these laws is still being formulated and still being developed. So on the heels of that, they're in the meantime, while we're waiting for those laws and the authorities to really set foot, is for all of us practitioners to kind of keep an eye on these types of transactions to ensure, to avoid basically money laundering and terrorist financing.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
If you have any questions, queries, headaches, niggles, clarity needed on any aspect of living within the law here in the UAE, this is your chance to get some free legal advice. It might be testing the water, it might be looking for a plan of action, or perhaps understanding if you do need to make some time and set some aside to investigate something further with a legal expert. Ludmilla Meliva is with us today from HPL Meliva and Pluka, and we're going for text lines. Ludmilla, anonymous message right here saying, if renting a property from a UAE national owner, can we keep the DIWA under his name to avail lower rates, or is that not allowed? If it is allowed, I've missed a trick over the last few years. Ludmilla, what does the law say?
Indeed. Well, I think the question sort of answers is a self-answered, and that is the special rate is there to as a benefit to UAE nationals. So therefore, if you're trying to avail yourself of that rate, technically speaking, you are not the right beneficiary. So I would say in legal terms, that should not be allowed. In practical terms, obviously, it's possible if the landlord wants to keep you on, but I would not recommend it.
It would surely have impact on your ajari as well. And if you are looking to employ somebody, the ajari would need to be correlating to the DIWA, which then you'd need to present the ajari to employ someone legally. So there could be a bit of a missing link as well if you were to go down that route, and I would presume. Hope for that helps. I do feel better about myself.
Better not to operate in a gray area. That's what I would say. I mean, there could be a number of inconveniences and challenges that would arise from this kind of a setup. But in legal terms, that benefit, again, is there for the UAE citizens only. And I'd say it'd be unfair for you to presume that you can. And I guess the person, though, the listener who's asking the question, obviously sort of knows the answer to the question already.
There you go.
It's a rhetorical question.
Well, we've had a number of messages around this over the last couple of months, Ludmilla. So perhaps we can offer some clarity here. No name on this message. And as we say, that's absolutely fine. Does one need proof of marriage to give birth in Ajman or the UAE in general? There have been some adjustments in regulations, more recently. What does the law say? And in practical terms, what happens if that proof is not there?
So in practical terms, and in legal terms, it is now not a crime to give a birth to a baby in the UAE without a marriage certificate. So it's no longer a crime. However, there are a number of requirements in order to potentially breach the law in sort of as time goes on. And that is, there is a specific provision in the law, and by the way, this is a crime and punishment law, or the UAE new penal law, which sets out that a baby that is born without a marriage certificate in the UAE can only be legal if the parents, if one of the other parents acknowledges the baby is theirs. And the and is an important operative word here, is the parents or the parents produces all the relevant documents, identification documents for the baby. Now, in practical terms, what that means is a birth certificate must be presented or must be issued for the baby, and then the back of a birth certificate, passport. In order to receive a birth certificate, however, technically speaking, the regulations and the protocols on what must be done in order to apply for birth certificate have not really changed. And that is, to this day, they still require a birth certificate. However, in the same regulations, they address that if you want to give birth to a baby without a marriage certificate, then you need to apply to court to seek their permission. Now, it may sound a lot more complicated than it really is. And that is, in real terms or in practical terms, the type of court case that you're filing is called an order on petition, which is an administrative and expedited, more of an administrative case, which once the judge or the court receives all the documents, they must issue a decision within a day or two. So I really, when I say expedited, it truly is expedited. And it's all done online for the most part. So in order to have that decision from the court authorizing you to receive a birth certificate without a marriage certificate, it's all you need is a So getting a little more technical, is a birth notification, which is a document from the hospital, basically shows when the baby was born. And the back of that, you apply to the court and they'll issue you a decision authorizing issuance of birth certificate. And then you can just, within just a few days, you can have a birth certificate. So that's sort of the process. So while in legal terms, there is, it's not illegal, but there are a number of things to do in order to continue for your baby to stay in the UAE and be considered legal.
Thank you for that. And thank you for the message as well. A really good reminder and great to get clarity on that, Ludmilla. No name on this one, saying not really a question, but a frustration. When moving, need to give 3 months notice, but for a new place, they expect 15 days or less to start the lease. Is this inequity considered by authorities? 3 month notice to vacate relative to finding new place seems ridiculous. It is interesting how fast things do tend to move when it comes to renting. I remember exactly the same situation, you know, giving notice, knowing where we wanted to move to, working out the budget, and then going, well, there's no point in looking until 2 or 3 weeks before. So I have no answer, unfortunately, but let's just say I think a lot of Dubai residents have had that same kind of limbo period, so you're far from alone.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Joining us live is Ludmilla Yamalova from HBL Malavan Pluka. She's on hand as our resident legal eagle to take my questions and yours about anything that might be giving you a bit of a headache. Maybe you've got a question about a regulation, need some clarity, or maybe an action plan. Perhaps what's, you know, your query might not even require any action at all. Your chance to get some free legal advice here on Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, we've got a couple of nanny questions, Ludmilla, and I'm hoping you can offer some clarity. Now, Janine has said, I've just learned that our nanny takes part-time work during the weekend. It's her business. It doesn't bother me too much, but I was wondering if it's even legal and if we can get in trouble as her sponsor. Couldn't find anything online. What does the law say about nannies earning at the weekend with or without the approval of their sponsor?
Well, there's two things I wanted to say. One is with regards to nannies, there's a specific employment law that governs what's called domestic workers, which includes nannies. So it's not your UAE labor law or employment law that we often refer to when we talk about employment cases. So domestic employees are subject to their own specific law. Now, that's one. Two, the recent amendments and changes we've been talking about in light of or in the context of UAE employment law that, in short, allows for flexibility of working arrangements and part-time and contract-based and no longer requiring approval from your sponsor to work for part-time for someone else. So those regulations, technically speaking, do not apply to domestic employees because all of those amendments and changes we've been talking about and hearing about are specifically targeted to the UAE private sector, and therefore the UAE employment law, which is different from the domestic employee laws. So that's in terms of the law. With regards to the domestic workers law, we haven't really seen any specific changes, and I'm talking about express changes to the domestic employee law, which allows domestic employees, properly sponsored domestic employees, to work for someone else. So that's not to say that they're not allowed to do so. It's just that there's nothing in the law that specifically mandates this. Okay. A few thing about that, however, is one is I'm not sure from on the basis of this question is whether this particular nanny is sponsored by the listener.
She is. Because
if they are sponsored by the listener, if ultimately in this, at least with regards to domestic employees, it is for the employer to decide and whether they want to allow the nanny to work for someone else part time. But I'd say since the law does not expressly forbid that practice, I'd say the safer way of doing it is at least having some sort of authorization letter if the employer is okay with nannies working part-time. A better or a safer thing to do is to issue an authorization letter that the nanny can have on her and showing that the employer expressly has allowed her to work somewhere else. And I'd say in the context of flexibility that has been introduced in the labor market in the last year, allowing for a contract and project-based employment, I would say that authorization letter, and it's safe to assume that sort of flexibility could be also extended to other sectors of employment with the right documents in place. And I'd say authorization letter would be helpful.
Okay.
However, if the employee is not, or the nanny is not on the employer's visa, which is the case with a lot of other nannies here, that's obviously a different sort of practice applies. If you want to do it legally and if the nanny is on your visa, just have at least a letter, first of all, discuss with the nanny to make sure that you are comfortable with that practice, because as long as she remains to be on your sponsorship, you are her, she's your responsibility and you're responsible for her 100%. So, in practical side of things, it's for the employer to decide whether they're comfortable with this practice. In legal terms, it is possible to at least have some documentation to show that this kind of arrangement has been approved by you and therefore is at least not against the law.
Makes sense. I think Janine's concern would be, could she potentially, as a sponsor, get in trouble? But if she's happy to approve it and perhaps, as you say, have that letter, that documentation, the law does not specifically prohibit it. So thank you for that. A follow-up question. A message here saying we're looking to hire a nanny on a full-time basis. Does the same gratuity, end of service gratuity rules apply as with a corporate employee? What does the law say, if anything, when it comes to end of service for domestic workers?
I love these kinds of questions because there is specific law that mandates gratuity for domestic employees, and many still seem to not know about this law, even though it's been in existence since 2009. The short answer is yes and no, in a sense. So there is gratuity that is paid to the nannies, but it is subject to a different law. So as for the domestic employee law, nannies are entitled, or domestic employees, so they could be nannies, they could be chefs, they could be drivers. So they're entitled to gratuity, which is calculated as 1 week of salary for every year of service. That's one. And then two is that this gratuity must be paid to the nannies every 2 years. And then this is irrespective of whether the contract has come to an end or their employment relationship continues. So in other words, you have to pay your nanny every 2 years and their gratuity, which ends up being about, it's not a 1 week, it's 2 weeks per year. So for every 2 years, you basically pay them an extra salary as part of their gratuity.
Okay.
So let's say if you have a nanny that's been working for you for 6 years or 5 years, you have had to pay her for the first 2 years, one extra month of salary, which is 2 weeks of salary for every year of service. And then another 1 month at year four, and now you're onto your year fifth. So on next year, you'll have to pay her another 1 month of salary. So every 2 years that gratuity has to be paid. I know a lot of employers might know about it, but they're not paying the gratuity because they might have had an agreement with the employee, with the nanny. And I guess that's one way of doing it. But legally speaking, the gratuity should be paid every 2 years. And I think if you want to be a good employer and you want to be compliant with the law, you must pay your nanny every 2 years, even if she's been with you for a long time.
Thank you for that. And as you say, it's worth raising for anyone as an employer, but also any employees listening today, to make sure they know their rights and what they're entitled to. Right, to the text line again, Ludmilla. It really is your last chance to get any messages in. I'm going to take a deep breath because this is quite a long message. Saying, my employer is part of a group of five companies. The employer has recently requested all of its employees to transfer their visas to another company in the group by cancelling and signing new contracts under the same terms of employment. The employer, however, has stated that the end of service benefits would not be paid upon transfer from old company to new company, and they would continue to get calculated and accrued from the date of joining the old company. Question: if the employees accept it, is there a risk of us losing our end of service for the period served under the old company? And would the company be able to prove that they only need to pay benefits from the date of the transfer to the new company? And does the employee have any right to refuse transfer of visa? If not, can we demand end of service be paid prior to transfer to the new company? Great question there. I'm really getting the nitty-gritty there of your rights to not sign, and what you are entitled to. We have only got a couple of minutes, and I want to be cramming in a couple more questions, Ludmilla, but are you able to help out this listener in a bit of a nutshell for what does sound like a pretty complicated employment question?
Yes, absolutely. There's number one, there's no risk. And number two, despite that it sounds complicated, actually it's not complicated. The law is fairly expressed and clear, and it always has been, by the way, that continuity of relationship is continuity of relationship, and the obligation continues. And irrespective of whether there was a specific undertaking or not, showing that that same company basically will continue to consider the first commencement day as the day for the purposes of end of service, irrespective of what the company is called right now or what structure it is today versus where it was when the employee started working for them first. So the continuity relationship is there, and it doesn't even, it's just more about proving that it's the same company. Mm-hmm. And that kind of relationship has been proven over in many cases that we have managed. It's been proven in all sorts of ways. So it's fairly easy to establish as long as it's the same company in one way or another, the continuity relationship and obligation therefore remains. Now, what I would say, so don't worry about it. There's no risk. But what I would say is since the employer here, the company said that assured them that this is the case, it would not hurt to have a specific undertaking from the company to all of the employees that states that. It just would remove that argument in the future if management changes hands, for example. So I'd say I would ask for that now with regards to whether the employee can demand to get paid out right now before they transfer over to a different company. As long as the company truly is kind of owned and is one of and the same, basically as employee, you can always ask to get paid out. But legally speaking, the company does not need to pay you out right now because it's, for all intents and purposes, in terms of the law, it's one and the same company.
Okay, that's good. Great to hear in terms of options, but great to get that clarity as well. Thank you for that. Great question and a great answer, Ludmilla. A question here from Barbara saying, the green visa is in at the 2 million dirham investment. Does that mean 2 million dirhams for one property, or could it be 2 million dirhams across a total of three properties, for example? What do we know about that?
It could be multiple properties. So it's about the cumulative investment. So it could be three properties would be just as good as one property, okay, as long as it's over 2 million dirhams.
Great. Thank you for that. Oh my goodness, I'm trying to find more questions, or trying to find as many as we can. Right. Let's see what we can do. It's a classic question, and I'm going to try and squeeze it in. Basically, trying to get your deposit back. Maya saying, what can I do if there's no damage to our property, but the landlord is not giving me my deposit back?
To file a request with RDC, which is the Rental Dispute Center, for return of a deposit. And by the way, it's very easy to do, and it's very efficient as well. So you do it online through RDC website, and there's, in fact, a specific request for refund of the deposit. And so in that case, I mean, I know it sounds a little more involved because you have to ultimately file a case with the court, but it is a rental court. It is an expedited court. Mm-hmm. And there is a specific request just for this very kind of dispute. And it gets resolved fairly quickly. And in most cases, the deposits get paid before the litigation proceeds, because it's just not worth the landlord. Mm. Furthermore, there is, if my memory serves me right, there has been recently some discussion that there will be a new system in place with RERA and slash RDC that will require landlords to keep the deposit with the authority. Certainly a similar concept already exists with the DIFC. And so in that case, these kinds of disputes don't really will not require actually filing a case by a tenant, but because the money for the deposit is already resident with the authority. So it's I guess it's more secure, and therefore the refund of it is more assured.
Interesting. Well, you'll hear it here first, I'm sure, if that does get announced. Last question of the day. Anonymous here saying, my sister left for her home country and has an outstanding loan. The local bank, so here in the UAE, is now calling me to say we're following up. I'm scared I will have to pay it back on behalf of my sister. Can they ask me to do that?
No, there's no risk. I mean, unless the listener was a signatory to the obligation, but I don't think so. So that obligation is personal to the person who actually took the loan. And in fact, the bank should not be calling family, in particular sisters and brothers, to demand payment. So it's actually inappropriate for the bank to be doing this. But in legal terms, the listener does not face any risks. And by the way, this extends even further, even between husbands and wives, because we often hear this sort of a question and concern from married couples. My husband had a loan and he didn't pay. Am I, as his wife, liable to repay it? No, it's a personal debt and a personal obligation to the person who actually took it.
Thank you, Ludmilla. Great to end on a reassuring note, and all the very best to the listener going through this right now. We will, of course, be back next week for your legal clinic. Ludmilla, in the meantime, go and get your morning coffee. Great to have you joining us from the US. Always appreciate your time, especially at this time in the morning. And we'll catch up with you next week. And don't forget, if you do have any questions for Ludmilla, she's live with us every single Monday afternoon between 4 and 5. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.